thank you to our sponsors, Digital Magic the Gathering Online Card Specialist, CardHoarder.com, and MTGOTraders.com. And also thank you to our paper magic specialist, GondaPlaid.com, along with Cape Fear Games, a online card store and brick-and-mortar card store. You can find us each week on MTGCast.com, StarCityGames.com, TCGPlayer.com, MyMTGO.com, and MTGSalvation.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to a very special, every week a special, Monday Night Magic episode 211. I don't know where we go.
Tom, what? Tom, before we even start, pubic lice and balls. There, it's going to be a hit episode. We can stop right now.
Yeah, we got sweaty balls, pubic lice, and some other...
Yeah, everything everybody loves. Already taken care of. Put this one in the bag, baby.
Yeah, so obviously Jack is here to help me out this week, and we had a very popular episode last week where we talked about not magic.
Nothing.
For majority of the episode.
What did we actually talk about last week, Tom? I don't even recall. Oh, baby powder. Yes.
It was all about baby powder, and this is almost like, I'm going to use a bad word, the abortion debate, where, I mean, really, there was two camps on this one. Jack and I came from the camp of, it didn't seem gross or weird to me. I had just never heard of doing that.
Yeah, and apparently we were unwashed neckbeards because we had never done it, which was interesting.
Exactly.
I mean, we had people calling us out saying, I cannot believe you two are men and have never used baby powder.
So I will stand corrected where I've never heard of that before, and I actually asked my wife about this, about why there'd be these two camps of people have never, not like you've used it once in a while, it's just not your thing, it's just like, I've never even heard of that, versus, yeah, that's what you do every day to keep things dry. I think it's one of those things, it's what, if your dad did it, you know.
Yeah.
And circumcised or not, do you use baby powder or not, that's how it goes.
Yeah, you drink whiskey and have regrets in the morning, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, you have hemorrhoids, you don't have hemorrhoids. Well, pretty much, have you ever heard that, Jack, that there's two types of people in the world? That there's people that have hemorrhoids or people are going to get hemorrhoids?
Well, I figure either way, they can't sit down for fear of either getting them or having them, so.
Yeah, because when you see really bad ones, they are frightening. It looks like
a lot of people with stiff knees. A lot of people with stiff knees.
And I don't know if you've ever been to a urologist's office. They have these just crazy toilets with like a mirror in the bottom.
Tom, no, I intend on sleeping sometime tonight. Let's just not even start on like urology and pissing blood. But what is Monday Night Magic about?
Well, Jack, thank you for reminding me. This is a show about magic. We actually had
Eric's not here, so I have to play the mother hand this episode.
You got to channel me in just a little bit. But we actually have a boatload of magic news to talk about this week.
I say we get started then.
So first is we got to toot the horn of somebody that used to be involved with MTGCast and Monday Night Magic. This is Gavin. So this past weekend we had the Magic Online community tournament, and the community team won on top of a lot of good play, but specifically from Gavin going 3-0 at the end to really pull it out.
All that training in the Verhey Cave is paying off finally.
It is, and I mean, I take a look at the picture and you can see I recognize Evan Irwin, obviously I recognize Gavin, I think. Is that Bill Stark in the back, I think?
Maybe.
I'm taking a look.
I kind of recognize the glasses and the goatee.
That's kind of what I'm kind of going by here. But overall, we have a link in the show notes. Go check it out. You know, pretty interesting formats. They did a Mirrodin draft, a Rise of the Eldrazi seal deck, a 100-card singleton unified constructed, and a standard unified constructed. If you want to take a look at the deck list, they have lists of all these different things on their website. It may be one of the longest pages you'll ever see on the Wizard of the Coast is the listing of everybody's singleton deck.
Oh my gosh.
Highlander, if you're coming from the paper magic world.
Because there can only be one.
So yes, so just kind of wade through this. It's kind of fun to see what people picked out. There's at least one Feldegriff, which made me very happy. Because that'll be coming up in my latest Tribal Time with Tom.
Those deadly hippos that are going to come right for you. Actually, did you know the hippo is the most deadly animal in Africa, Tom?
Yeah, they kill more people than pretty much any other animal combined, because they basically will tip over over boats and then eat you.
Them and the bugs that can swim up your pee when you're letting yourself go in the river.
Yeah, just knowing that happens somewhere in the world, that makes me not want to pee in any sort of body of water anywhere.
Oh no, never. They make bottles for that. By gosh, they make bottles.
To use in the water? Or are you talking about the pee buddy thing?
Yes, both ways, actually. but they do make a... is the pee buddy the robot that comes to you?
No, this is just like we had it in the boat. It looked like a red, kind of like long bottle that you just peed into if you're on the boat.
Oh, this is news to me, but I've heard of the robot that you can actually wheel up to you and, you know, you do your business to.
It's a robot?
Robots are doing everything now, Tom. They're delivering babies, like helping surgeons, delivering our mail.
It'd be really gross. It's like you're peeing into its mouth or something. That'd be really bad.
Yeah, but then it would just be R. Kelly bought 5,000.
Oh, I haven't thought about R. Kelly in a long time. Was it like an 18-year-old girl or something that he supposedly peed on?
It was I believe it was a 15-year-old girl, and like for a while after that, I couldn't take him seriously, and then I watched Trapped in the Closet, and it was okay, even though it was weird, but okay.
And I also have to give street credit to a company in Minnesota that makes the female version of the Pee Buddy, which is called the Go Girl.
Does it come with like its own set of like knee-high white boots?
Actually, it comes with like it almost looks like a bike, like an inverted bike seat, I guess, because it kind of fits over that area, so you can just pee into it.
So, like, a cage doesn't drop down around you and you're forced to dance uncontrollably?
It's not a go-go girl. It's just the go-girl.
Right.
So, the other thing that had me almost excited about learning about the go-girl was that we have all of the deck lists and the scheme cards now for the Archenemy decks. Now, I took a look through these. I mean, I would say the Assemble the Doomsday Machine to me overall looks the most interesting. You can debate what rares are best out of each deck. Overall, the most unified deck, I would have to say, is the Scorch the World with Dragonfire, because you could guess it's a dragon deck. And you're getting stuff like Chameleon Colossus. You're getting some pretty decent cards in that.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I mean, overall, Tom, I'm not that hyped about Archenemy just yet. It will probably take me physically sitting down and having the cards in my hand and shuffling them around a little bit before I get used to the format. I don't like judging this kind of thing right before it comes out, but I mean, this looks interesting. They're trying so hard to appeal to the casual crowd of Magic that it's going to be worth a shot, don't you think?
Oh, I think so. I agree. Overall, I am very, very excited for this. I do agree where people are a little wondering if this is going to burn out like Plane Chase a bit, is when you look at the scheme cards, they are clearly were tailored to the four decks. Like, all of the Scores of the Dragonfire, a lot of them have dragon art and kind of dragon themes for them. It seems like that might not entice people as much to make custom decks to go with these. It's probably like Plane Chase for most people to stay with the decks that come with them.
Now, did you catch on a couple of the scheme cards that actually have art from like D&D and stuff like that? Do you think perhaps that they're trying to like maybe mesh the D&D and the Magic crowd together?
I don't know. And I think I would say that is not coming out of left field, because when we start talking about M11, you're going to see some little bit of changes to that as well, which is really starting to show that they... I'm trying to say how to put it. Bring a little bit more of these kind of set personas into the Magic world, which to me is more D&D-like.
Yeah. Well, what caught my eye is if you look on the Scorch the World with Dragonfire deck, for example, there's a card that says, I Bask in Your Silent Awe, which is my other complaint with these decks. That, like, the title for the cards are just way too many syllables. Blah, 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 blah. It's going to take you 15 minutes to do your turn, and you're just going to be playing
an old, boring man. You too good for the early bird? That makes this thing sound cool.
Back in my day, we only had 5 syllables on the cards and we liked it. Giant growth.
I win.
It summed it all up. Giant growth. That's all you needed.
But, for example, going back to my point, I Bask in Your Silent Awe. That looks like a red dragon from D&D to me.
It's big. It doesn't really look like a... It almost looks more like a hellion to a little bit from Magic.
It's kind of dragony, has big horns and teeth.
Now, let me tell you about my favorite scheme card. Let me see if this sells you a little bit on potentially playing Archmage.
All right, Tom. This is going to ride everything on it. You are giving me the pitch for the set, okay?
Yes. And this would only be cool if you are the Archenemy playing this scheme. For the other people on the table, not so cool.
As we established before this episode, I'm quite the douchebag when it comes to Magic. So, by all means, sell me, Tom. Sell me.
Sure, yeah, because this is probably the ultimate douchebag card. This is my Crushing Masterstroke. This is in the Scorched World of Dragonfire deck. It's a scheme. When you set the scheme in motion, you gain control of all non-land permanents your opponents control until end of turn. Untap those permanents. They gain haste until end of turn. Each of them attacks its owner if able.
Well, good grief. Yeah, that's pretty game-changing.
I would have to say that seems not only getting rid of all their blockers, but you get their attackers, and I'm guessing a lot of times, unless this comes out in the first few turns, that's a pretty big swing.
Yeah, that's definitely going to cause a lot of problems for folks, needless to say. And, you know, nobody likes it when you gain control of something, as I've so learned this weekend.
And I guess this would be potentially like a nightmare if everybody was using the same colored sleeves or something, where you just have this pile of controlled permits from multiple players.
Well, have you ever played Thieves Auction with a bunch of guys that don't sleeve their EDH decks? That's fun. I tell you what, that is a lot of fun.
An unsleeved EDH deck? I don't know if I've seen that yet.
These guys have balls made out of steel. That's all I'm saying.
At least it might be a little bit more manageable, though, because once you start getting the 100-plus card decks, they get to be a little unwieldy, especially in sleeves. They tend to like to tip over and...
Especially if you have, like, the Ultra Pro sleeves where they start peeling because you've been playing with them for longer than a week, you know?
Yeah, I don't buy the Ultra Pro. This is...
Me either.
We'll start the debate again about what are the best sleeves, then we get a lot of emails about very angry people. I use the Dragon Shields. That's just what I use.
I'm a little partial to KMC now because they seem to be a little bit durable. They don't peel at the corners as much as the Dragon Shields do. But yeah, I would have to agree with you, Tom. Like, I don't have the problem where when I shuffle the Dragon Shields up, they accidentally stab one another and get caught in each other's sleeve.
So, Jack, even after hearing about this amazing, like, crushing Masterstroke, are you still on the fence?
I'm on the fence, man. I mean, it's Tom, how long have we been podcasting together?
Well, probably... But, like, what kind of fence are we talking about? Are we, like, on the fence, like, the new Karate Kid on the fence? Or, like, new Coke versus the original Coke sort of fence?
I'm always the kind of guy where, like, it takes me physically experiencing something, like I said, before I can make up my mind on it. Arch
wow,
Enemy
that,
C...
That makes a lot
oh,
of sense.
Oh, the email we are going to get this week. I
guess I've never put a burning light bulb up there. I don't know
but
until I physically experienced it myself. Oh, God, that was horrible.
But at least I did it though, right? Right?
You did. Have you ever... Okay, slight diversion. This is the Science Museum of Minnesota. They have a medical oddities exhibit now that's permanent.
Anytime you say medical and oddities in the same sentence, I cringe just a little bit. I hope
yeah,
you know
because we're going to the world of prostate warmers.
Ah, prostate warmers. That's like your anus, isn't it? Or
well,
my
prostate's
got
in the anus,
stuff.
Yes.
Ah, ha, ha, ha.
It was felt to be good health if you, like, warm that area up. So it's, you know, you can touch it with your fingers. Like, when you're in the doctor's office and they do a rectal exam, they're feeling your prostate, basically. So you can tell how it's not very far in. So you could put a light bulb in there and warm it, which is what they used to do.
Oh, God.
The craziest thing is you look at the ones in this collection, like, they plugged into the wall. Like, they had, like, an outlet plug. You're just like, that looks frightening.
And now I know where the phrase "light you up like a Christmas tree" came from.
Yes,
it's also obvious. Okay, going back to our magical discussion at hand, though. To be honest, like I think after I sit down and I'll play a little bit with Arch Enemy, especially as me as the Arch Enemy character, I'll come to enjoy it a lot. But I don't know. After seeing where they went with Plane Chase and how they just kind of let it like wither on the vine. I mean. I'd hate to get excited about something like this and then really enjoy it and then it not be around like a month later. That's something that I worry about a little bit.
I think you can make a good point where, like, so far I'm reading these cards, I'm only looking at Arch Enemy from the perspective of playing the Arch Enemy. I'm trying to see what would really entice me to play as not the Arch Enemy.
Yeah, because, I mean, Tom, and I'm sure you've experienced this in your own EDH games, when you have the one guy at the table that is a douchebag and he can do horrible, horrible things to everybody else, right? That kind of takes the fun out of the game. And, like, I mean, as an Arch Enemy player, if you enjoy that kind of sadistic glee of doing that, yeah, that gives you incentive to play. But as you're the other players, what is going to keep you coming back to that table if you keep getting your butt handed to you every game?
See, the one maybe escape from that is they did mention is another way to play Arch Enemy is where every single person is an Arch Enemy.
Ooh.
Where everybody has their own Arch Enemy deck.
Ooh.
So it would be,
that seems interesting.
This would be even a more rapidly changing game than Plane Chases. Every turn, there could be a pretty big whopping effect happening.
Good grief, yeah. I think I could get into that. That would be at least a little bit more exciting than the horrific Chaos Magic games I've had.
Because, yeah, it would probably make things go a little bit faster, because at some point, there's going to be something that gets flipped over, like Crushing Masterstroke, where it's just like, yep, that's the end of the game. And I do like that the schemes do have a pretty wide range of effect, where you have ones that go anywhere from taking everybody's non-land permanents to put two lands into play. It's like, oh, okay,
that's so devious.
Good,
evil.
But it's
yeah.
Not like game-crushing like the other ones.
Let's see. Destroy up to three non-target non-land permanents. Ooh, that seems kind of game-changing as well, though.
Yeah, and there's, you know, the draw the four cards one. One basically... I mean, this one. Your fate is thrice sealed. This isn't a bunch of them. When you set the scheme in motion, reveal the top three cards of your library. Put all land cards revealed this way onto the battlefield and put the rest into your hand. So good, but not insanely good as maybe some of the other ones.
It's kind of a fixed ponder in a weird sort of way.
Yeah. So that's what I kind of like that there is. It's not like you know for sure when they flip that card over, you're going to get hosed. You have a chance to get hosed, but you have a chance of maybe having something happen too bad.
Now, Tom, what do you think of the art on some of these? I'm very enticed by that alone.
Well, I like because these are going to be kind of large cards like the plane chase. They're, I guess, portrait orientated, not landscape orientated like the plane cards. And it just looks fantastic.
I'll be honest with you, I like where they're going with some of the templating on, like, for example, the Eldrazi cards where you get to see the entire picture and not just, you know, one little square.
We can see basically, you see the text box is not fully opaque. You can somewhat transfer, you can see through it.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. I like being able to appreciate the time that the artist put into it.
You wonder, as artists, if this would entice them to do more magic art, where they know they're going to have their art appear on a larger card and also have more of it be visible?
Well, I think, like, and this is me making baseless, in-the-dark assumptions, I think they just go ahead and do the entire picture, and then later somebody comes and crops it.
Well, it seems like to me, it seems like that would be a little demotivating if I was an artist.
Yeah, because you'd only get, like, part of the work you put into it. You might be like Bob Ross, and you have your secret tree off to the side, and the secret tree gets left out.
Exactly. And I also like how they somewhat brought back the stuffy doll sort of S theme for some of the art. It's like the one in the smoldering dragonfire. I delight in your convulsions. It has little stuffy doll-like things.
Let me take a click on it right here. If my internet's willing to work with me. Come on. Oh, that's cute.
And it says, when you set the scheme of motion, each opponent loses 3 life. You gain life equal to the life lost this way.
Ouchies.
So again, good, but recoverable.
Not broken, yeah.
So I mean, we've talked a lot about Archemy. We'll move on, but I'm still excited. I just wanted to share that we had all the deck lists. It's looking cool. And we also know about the 2 so far announced promotional scheme cards that are coming out. We have Plot That Spans Centuries. The next time you would set a scheme in motion, you set 3 in motion instead, which is kind of cool. And the one I think can get a lot of people very excited or very angry if you don't own any Planeswalkers is Perhaps You've Met My Cohort. And really what happens is you tutor a Planeswalker into play.
That's pretty douchebaggy.
Yeah, especially if you're pulling, like, say, like a Nicol Bolas.
I think I will tutor Tetherette into play, and then I will get a 10th 8th Divining Top, and based off that, brain freeze you. That could hurt, yeah.
And you also kind of brought up, you know, plane chases, you know, not being supported as much. We actually do have one of the last known promotional planes is going to be coming out. This is Timber City. It's on the plane Kinshala. I'm sorry, I don't know where that is. Whenever a player taps the land for mana, Timber City does 1 damage to that player. So it's kind of like a mana barbs. Chaos. Whenever you roll chaos, each other player sacrifices a non-land permanent.
Well, that kind of sucks.
It's not often that the chaos thing really is... It doesn't affect the person themselves. I like how it affects all the other players.
It keeps everybody fair, yeah.
Let's see. And then now we will... So that's... We got our Archon, we got our Plane Chase out of the way. The next big thing is M11. M11 is rapidly approaching.
I'm, once again, impressed by the skills of the people in the rumor mill over at MTG Sally.
Yes, and this is something, too, where... I mean, so far, really, all of the... We'll call them spoilers, but these are more previews. These are really, I guess, officially... announced ones.
Yeah, it's nice to see the entire set not get spoiled like 4 months before it actually comes out. Because, I mean, that ruins the anticipation of the set, in my opinion.
I will have to agree with you. When this first happened, when we had the whole Rancored Elf thing go down, I think a lot of people were... Whenever anything changes, you get mad and angry.
Rawr, how dare you take away my spoilers? Rawr.
But I do agree with you. When you knew the entire set a month before... By the time it actually came out, you honestly didn't care that much anymore.
Also, like, when you go to the pre-release, it really sucks to have people who have already proxied up and practiced that set to death, like on the MTGO or Magic Workstation or something like that. So then you get trounced by people who have more experience with the cards that shouldn't have been released so early in the first place than you do.
So what we're going to do is we're going to kind of run through the spoiler list, and we have 116 cards out of the 249, which is quite a few. And why don't we kind of go over the few changes people have noted that really is signifying that there may be a big turn or a big change in how they're doing at least the base sets, but maybe Magic in general. And this is where they're pushing having a named person and then having cards directly refer to that person. Kind of Weatherlight style. We had Gerard's Wisdom, we had all these other different cards like that. Now we're having cards directly naming Planeswalkers. And we also, it looks like there's going to be a cycle where each of the Planeswalkers, so we know about Ajani, Jace, Is it Liliana, I think, for black?
Yeah.
And green, and we have Garruk as well for green. And it looks like there's going to be a cycle where each planeswalker is going to have a creature, an enchantment, and then I guess what would be some sort of an instant or a sorcery, I guess. So the ones
and I think, needless to say, this confirms that the original five are going to get reprinted.
I think you can pretty much say this is what we're going to be seeing. And I know a lot of people, that made them upset about M11, say, well, why am I even going to buy this set? I don't know, for a lot of us that maybe don't have some of the Planeswalkers, this is going to bring down the price of the original five even more.
Yeah, so now they'll probably be, what, $2, $3, $5 in some cases?
Yeah, and to me, I'm not running a card store. I don't have these already. To me, that's okay.
I'll tell you exactly the reason people are going to still buy M11, and it's because of Baneslayer Angel still being in the core set. That is fantastic.
Yes, so that has made sure people get these cards. But when we actually run through these, there are some really decent new cards in this set, and some kind of nice functional reprints.
I love the push that they're giving blue in this set. Like, they looked at everything they did long with Magic M10, excuse me, and they were like, you know what? We realized we were idiots last time, so we're going to fix it this time. And, I mean, like, for example, Aether Adept is not really that bad. I like the fact that we now have Scry 3 as a keyword.
Yeah, did that surprise you to have Scry? Basically, we have a new keyword really coming into the base set.
It was, at first, yeah, it was a little surprising, but then it's, like we were talking earlier, I mean, it's getting to where Wizards is realizing they have to fix some of the templating issues they've had on cards, I think. And, I mean, for example, like with Argyreal, we have flying when Argyreal enters the battlefield, Scry 3. That takes up a lot less room on the text box than, when this card comes into play, please look at the top three cards of your library, rearrange them in any order, and then place them back upon your deck. Would you agree?
Oh, definitely. It's not often that we see a new keyword put into the base set.
No. But, I mean, it's definitely, I think they're slowly trying to fix all the problems they had over the years. And that's the main reason we're getting Scry, is just because they're wanting creatures that do more, and they're trying to save room in the text box.
And this kind of reminds me, like, I wonder who at Wizards kind of decides what is appropriate for a new player versus what is not appropriate. Because I find it interesting that Scry is there, but we're probably not going to see multicolored cards.
Well, I also think it's interesting that now we have enemy-colored starter decks for Magic 2011.
Yeah,
like green
so
and black.
Doesn't reinforce the whole allied colors basic
that
Magic.
That was a major change-up, yeah. That kind of gives me a suspicion that they might be printing enemy-colored dual lands. But I think that's kind of a shot in the dark.
Now, what do you think about new base sets or core sets like M11 printing cards that functionally obsolete an old card, where they have the same effect for a less casting cost?
Oh, we naturally must be talking about the better, shinier Megrim that's getting printed.
Yes, Liliana's Caress. It is Megrim for a black and a colorless. And the other cool thing is it loses life. It's not damaged now.
Well, Tom, you know, I mean, times change. Cards get obsoleted. And, I mean, let's be honest. Like, Megrim, it was a cool card. It was a fun deck to play, like, at Friday Night Magic. But in all honesty, was it playable, like, in recent years without Dark Ritual or anything like that? No. Yeah, I mean, like, you weren't, when you were building a deck, even a fun one for Friday Night Magic, you weren't just going to go like, ha-ha, Megrim, you coming with me, baby. But Liliana's Caress, you can look at that card and you can seriously say, this would be a card I can actually, like, consider ducking into my discard deck. Like, it's just better. I mean, times change, and as I was stating earlier, they're trying to fix the cards that have had something wrong with them over the years, or just getting old. I have no problem with them dropping older cards for functionally better ones.
Or cards like Mons or Goblin Balloon Brigade, bringing back really good ones.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that. If nothing else, it's just going to make people who already enjoy the game enjoy it even more. And because now they have a wider card selection.
And what do you think of, well, looks like we also have this new cycle of the fire of the servant cards for each color. We have Water Servant, Fire Servant, very imaginatively named. I assume we're going to have, like, Swamp Servant or whatever else.
Kudzu Servant.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you right now, like, I just let out a deep sigh when I saw these, because Water Servant is such a tease. It's like they know we want Morphling back, but they're not going to do it. Oh, that just makes me a sad panda.
What did you think of Fire Servant? That one, at first you really like, that's crazy good, but then I also realized it's 5 mana for 4/3 that you potentially may have used up. But let me say what the card is. 2 red, 3 colorless, it's a 4/3 creature elemental. If a red instant or sorcery spell you control would deal damage to a creature or player, it deals double that damage instead.
At 5 mana, like, I would want it to have haste, at least. And, I mean, that seems really cool, but with a burn deck, I mean, you're already going to have other things you're going to be doing for 5 mana, you know?
I was a little torn, because in some ways it seems like it's a bear. You know, at least, like, it's a 4-3 body at least attached to it. To me, yeah. It's like, instead of playing a Furnace of Wrath, I'm spending 1 colorless mana more, and I'm getting a 4-3. I guess it's easier to kill that way, but it's also nice that I have a clock on the table, and it's not benefiting my opponent.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool card. I definitely see it being used in draft, especially with Lightning Bolt being reprinted. But, I don't know. At 5 mana, I really wish it had haste.
I guess I would take, like, a 3-3 with haste, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I could work with that, and you could keep the same cost.
To keep it in red, they actually, you know, they want it more like a fire elemental where you have a power greater than toughness. But to me, it seems like it almost could have made it like a 0-6. It's likely I'm not going to be attacking with this thing. I want to sit there and just beef up my burn.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to swing with it. It's going to be like, they could have made it a goblin shaman or anything else, and, you know. It just doesn't speak to me, Tom. I'm sorry.
And also, this would, hopefully when Conley is back for next week when we start talking about creature creep again, everybody has their panties in a twist over Garruk's Companion. Because I still remember when, is it Elvish Warrior first came out? Elvish Warrior was 2 green for a 2-3. Everybody's just like, wow, you know, 2 mana for 2-3, this is insane.
This card is absolutely off the chain, raw.
So we have Garruk's Companion, which doesn't that sound weird? It sounds like he's trying to describe his boyfriend but doesn't want to use that word. Like, here's my companion. Here's my man friend.
This is my animal friend that I met in the woods. And
why'd you two meet?
Well, things happen.
He sleeps in my bed, but, you know, that's
not
weird.
Yeah, it's not weird if I cuddle up to him in the darkness because he's warm and he just looks into my eyes. And
I imagine, like, sleeping with Blanca from, like, Street Fighter. That's what I imagine this thing looking like.
Ooh, oh, Tom, you just gave me a horrible mental image.
So,
of course, I was going to say bad dragon, so I guess we're even.
Exactly. So, yes, don't even tell me about that. So, yes, Google bad dragon, and you'll forever be scarred and hate Jack. Because it makes you sad for the world.
They'll just be scarred. They already hate me, so it works out evenly.
So, Garruk's Companion is just 2 green. It's a common. A 3-2 with trample.
Is it really that crazy, though? I mean, honestly.
No, but it's interesting to see an example of kind of what I would consider creature creep kind of in effect.
To me, yeah, I mean, this is definitely, I think this thing will see play, but in all honesty, this card, it's going to get chump blocked so often, and the most damage it might do is like 1 will carry over, or 2 will carry over.
But this is, you know, potentially likely mono green. This is a 2 green casting cost.
Yeah. It'll probably definitely replace the 3 green guy from the last set, Rise of the Eldrazi. The 4-5-er. I can't remember his name right now.
One of those behemoths or something like that.
Yeah, the big thing that was plated and it was a beast and also a companion.
But, I mean, I'm seeing that a lot of people would be... There's going to be a lot of pump in mono green where this still seems going to be pretty decent.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this with monstrous growth or anything else is going to hurt. Especially when it hits you on turn 3.
So I guess there's actually quite a few creatures of Magic so far that have cost 2 green. Oh, People of the Woods. That is one I have not thought of in a long time.
My gosh, what's that do?
Oh, it's from The Dark. I used to have a deck with this.
No wonder I didn't hear about it, yeah.
Green and a green. People of the Woods toughness, it's a 1 and a star. Its star is the number of forests you control.
That seems like a horrifyingly disappointing card.
Yes. That's all you got back in the dark time. If it wasn't a ball lightning, that's what you got.
Yeah, you just... who was it that we heard from where they said they went to a conference where Wizards of the Coast showed a film where they were pushing a bulldozer with boxes of the dark and homelands into a pit?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, there was a guy at my store. I remember now. And he, like, apparently ran a comic book store for a long, long time. And he went to a conference where Wizards of the Coast was, like, holding a business, whatever you want to call it. And they were talking about how their new sets were coming out. And they're like, we understand we've had problems with sets in the past. And Wizards, apparently, when they get overruns of sets, they either, like, they can't just, you know, turn around and sell them. So they have to dispose of them in some way. So they showed a clip of a bulldozer pushing Homelands and the Dark into a pit, and everybody clapped.
That's sad, because technically Homelands is probably a better set in a lot of ways. But the dark, to me, still it reminds me of being one of the coolest magic sets I'd ever seen.
Really?
Because you had, like, Sisters of the Flame, you had Blood Moon, you had all these really cool, they were dark-themed cards.
Yeah, like, and that really was not captured until years later with Shadowmoor, if you think about it.
So, I mean, if you ask me as, like, a personal favorite set, the dark is one of the top. Because I still remember when buying packs of the dark, just the packages themselves looked cool.
Did they ooze with gothic flavor?
Yeah, it was just, you got excited when you opened a pack of the dark, because you're seeing kind of crazy stuff, all these goblin shrines and
preacher. So, like, would you open it and suddenly mist would just pour out of the pack?
Yeah, it was just, I don't know. I just really enjoyed the set in general.
Ah, okay.
So, there, if you want a Christmas gift for Tom, send him some packs of the dark, and he'll be very happy.
Don't tempt our listeners. They're capable of anything, we've learned.
I can't believe the Preacher's only like $4 or $5. That's such a cool card. Have you ever had a Preacher? Not only is the art amazing by Quentin Hoover, it's just a cool control creature in white.
I have no idea what card you're even talking
about. Preacher,
right,
two
now.
White and a colorless. This is from the dark, of course.
Oh, yeah. I remember. Doesn't it have, like, the angry Anabaptist minister, like, slamming his hand on the pedestal?
Yes. And it just basically, you can choose not to untap him. Tap, gain control of target creature and opponent of an opponent's choice that they control. So you kind of get one of their flock. You don't get to choose, but you get one of them.
So you can convert them.
It was just a cool, you know, for a 1/1, it was just a cool card. But it's just my personal bias. I still think Dark is, not for play reasons, just for casual Magic flavor, is still my favorite Magic set.
Well, Tom, since we're talking about favorites and Magic sets, what has you excited in M11 so far?
Oh, boy, there is a lot of really good ones in this set.
I can almost hear you salivating on the other end of the mic.
Yeah, I mean, let's kind of pick one from kind of each color here. Let me go up to white. I guess Baneslayer is cool because that means I might actually have one at some point in my life. the interesting thing is we have Condemned, so pretty sure we're not going to be seeing Path to Exile again. So
yeah, it's going bye-bye. We'll
have to live with that one.
Well, Condemned's really not that bad of a replacement.
No. I mean, Augury Owl, that's pretty... I want to see one of these. I can't imagine this is a creature just type owl. I assume it has to be a bird. Okay, good. I'm looking at the actual card's hand. It is a bird. Thank goodness.
I so badly wish they'd make Excommunicate an instant.
It would be a better card. I will give you that. Another interesting one, it's nowhere near as good as Snake Form, but Diminish. Just the one blue instant, target creature becomes a 1/1 until end of turn.
I can actually see myself playing that.
I mean, you don't get the card, it keeps its abilities, but it still seems like a decent card for blue, especially in draft or limited.
Yeah.
I like Sleep just because of its name. The ones from black that actually has me the most excited is Liliana Spectre, which is really a Ravenous Rat that only hits your opponent, and it was also a 2/1 flyer for 2 black and a colorless.
Ooh.
Pretty decent. 2 black and colorless, 2/1 flyer. When it comes into, enters the battlefield, ETB, each opponent discards a card.
Now, Tom, let me ask you a question about the term changes, I guess I should say. What would you prefer? Do you like comes into play or enter the battlefield?
Well, it's one of those things where I've played long enough where it's always going to, I will say, in my mind, it will say comes into play.
Are you going to be one of those old codgers that corrects the young kids when you're at draft every time and you're going to say, no, it's coming to play?
I'll be like, as long as I understand what it means, I don't even care. But to me, when I read that, I don't even see enters the battlefield, I see comes into play.
There's this one guy where I play every time without fail, somebody says comes into the battlefield, he just grimaces.
It's one of those things where overall these changes are good, I don't care anymore. The one from red, this may be the card that has me the most excited for this set, and I bet Conley will pick this one too. This is the new Wee Dragonauts. We have Chandra Spitfire. For 2 and a red, it's a creature elemental, it's a 1/3 flying. Whenever an opponent is dealt non-combat damage, this creature gets +3/+0 until end of turn.
Seems interesting. Yes.
Already for casual, I imagine like combining this with Grape Shot.
Oh gosh, that's just dirty, Tom.
One damage storm, so it's like, oh, it's like a. I guess it would be a 13.
It's a 23. Wah, wah, wah.
And there's just some decent burn in this set. I mean, Chandra's Outrage seems interesting. It seems like a good common burn spell, 4 mana for total of 6 damage.
Arc Runner seems rather interesting, especially since it's not just an elemental, it's an elemental ox.
Yes, which is just strange.
I kind of imagine it like stealing the art from the red changeling from Morningtide.
Oh, yeah, Taurine Mauler.
That's the one that's playing Dragon Stompy.
And I know a lot of people are really pissed off about this card. Because A, it probably means we're not going to see Ball Lightning. And B, I can understand it doesn't have Trample.
Nope, just straight up 5-1 swinging.
So I think a lot of people are like, yeah, I can't wait for this thing to be chump blocked by a 0-1 token.
It'll be incredible. It'll be like the greatest play in Magic history.
Yeah, that's just the way it goes. Goblin Bloom Brigade, I'm just happy to see that one back in the main set. It seems like now with all the different pumping and all the Goblin Lords, being able to give a 1-1 Goblin flying for an inexpensive 1 red doesn't seem terrible.
Yeah, it's nowhere near as broken as it used to be.
Let's see, Cultivate is the... Kadama's Reach is back now in the base set as Cultivate.
We finally got our wish on that.
Yes, I was very excited for that. We talked about Garrow's Companion. That was...
I think a Cultivate makes playing multiple colors in draft actually a lot more feasible.
Oh, it does. I mean, it was a fantastic card back in the Kamigawa block.
Which makes me wonder if they're actually going to reap for a rampant growth. Or has that been confirmed yet?
Not that I
let me
of it.
Let me scroll through the official spoiler list here.
It is not on the official spoiler list so far. I'm guessing the answer would be no.
Ooh.
If we have Cultivate, I'm guessing we're not going to see Rampant Growth.
That'll be interesting.
And then the other card that just straight out makes an old card obsolete, we have Wall of Vines. It's a plant.
Bye bye, Wall of Wood.
Yes, this is Wall of Wood that has reach. So a green for a 0/3 defender with reach. Wall of Wood has officially just been made a little bitch by this card.
No. Do you see yourself actually like slightly giving this card a nod now, Tom?
It is a plant, so it theoretically could go into my plant wall deck.
Yeah, the infamous plant wall zombie. Yes. I forgot what other creature types were involved in that deck.
It was a plant tribal deck.
Oh boy, I actually watched that video and I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta make sure you go check out the new one that I just put up last week.
Was it Bears?
Wild. Where I even made like the
I saw that on our page, and I was very tempted to go click on it, but I didn't have time.
I even put the little stars like over the bears, like, you know, boob area, just like they do in the Girls Gone Wild videos.
You're too much.
I get really into it.
Oh, you're too much.
I have a new one coming out next week too.
Oh, what's that going to be?
It's going to be Rocks and Roll, like ROHX or ROHOX.
Okay, now I'm wondering, do you come up with these right off the top of your head, or do you sit down and give them careful consideration before you name them?
No, I always pick the tribe, and then I make it up, and eventually I try to assign a name. And initially I had the Rhino Rough Riders was the first one. That sounded a little dirty and gross.
Where were you when they were having to write the dialogue for Duke Nukem?
Written hard and put away wet. I actually heard that from my dad, so I can't give Duke Nukem credit for that one.
I got balls of steel. You know, that's the real reason they haven't made another Army of Darkness movie, is they can't rip off lines from that yet.
Now, is your dad ever just, like when you're an adult, like come out with like little gems, and he's like, I've never heard you say that, and that's disgusting?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my entire life, every good story I have about Dad is usually with him saying some pithy comment and smoking a cigarette. So, yeah. Oh, that has not ceased since I was a child and hasn't changed at all now that I'm an adult.
So he saw this like really trashy lady on the street. He's like, wow, looks like she was ridden hard and put away wet. I'm like, what?
Oh, yeah. You've not grown up in the LaCroix household. There, you have to throw a few more curse words into that to actually accurately portray Dad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my mom gave up years ago trying to let either of us have a clean mouth, so.
Well, let's see. Now, is there any other cards I didn't mention that kind of jumped out of you, Jack, from what we have so far? We have about, I guess, 2/5 of the set so far.
Actually, yes. And I'm pretty sure nobody's mentioned this one yet, so I'm going to jump on my soapbox and do a little dance about it. I am in love with Jace's Ingenuity. It's a 2 blue and 3 colorless, it's an instant, an uncommon, and it says draw 3 cards. If I may say so, it is about damn time we got something like this. I am so excited about this thing. This is a great playable draw card for blue. I mean, people have wanted something like this for so long, and they finally printed it. I am so happy. Thank you, Wizards of the Coast. You've made all my like magic-related wet dreams come true.
Now, do you feel like making it an instant and doing 3 cards makes it better than Tidings?
Yeah, I mean, this is phenomenally better than Tidings, in my opinion, because it's just the fact that it is an instant, Tom, that makes it so much better. Because if you really, and I'm just going to go ahead and say this is why this is better. What separates the men from the boys in Magic is the fact that you play like you don't really have just one turn. You play at the end of your opponent's turn as well as yours, so you have as much time as possible to do whatever you need to. To me, Jace's Ingenuity says, momentarily tap 5 mana, draw 3 cards. I mean, this is, to me, this is great. I'm in love with this thing. I would much rather have this than Tidings. Even if Tidings does dig that one extra card out, this is so much better to me.
You're not tapping out for an entire turn to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not giving them a turn to molest me, basically.
They don't even need to be playing Magic to do that.
Oh, shush! Your horrible titles, and now we're having jokes that just burn me ever so slightly. I'll get you back.
In your deck that's going to be playing Jace's Ingenuity, are you going to be having a Water Servant in there? Or does it just make you angry that it's kind of like that Morphin that we mentioned?
I'm not even going to look at Water Servant. If I get past it in a draft, it's just going away. It doesn't even have flying, for Christ's sake. I think that's the thing that disappoints me the most about the Servants is, like, they have these cool abilities, but something that is so innate to their color, they lack. Like, Water Servant, if it had flying, like, that thing would be great, and I would definitely play it. If Fire Servant had haste, I would definitely play it. It's, I don't know, but I can't complain because they printed Jace's Ingenuity, so I'm just going to stop before I get an angry little rant.
And now, anything else for M11 before we move on? It's, so far, the set looks like it's going to be a blast. I mean, it seems like it's going to be a pretty good set overall.
I'm happy to see Corrupt in the core set, finally.
Now, I heard when I did the podcast with the Power Creep guys, they were actually upset about having Corrupt, because this means we're not going to have Tendrils back. We're not going to have both in the same set.
Yeah, that does kind of suck. Man, I mean, Vampires will probably suffer for that, but to me, Corrupt, I like it because it is a finisher in mono-black control. And, I mean, Tendrils is good, it's great removal, and it can definitely change the game. Corrupt can end the game, though, and that's why I'm excited about it.
And I think a lot of us just have fond memories of Corrupt. When it first came out for Mono Black,
Years,
like, oh, I'm so annoyed by this card.
Even like a couple of years ago, having it and Corlash legal at the same time.
Yeah, that was not even very fun.
Oh, that was fun.
Essentially, because Corrupt, yeah, Urza Saga. I just remember the first set that it came out, and it just came to mind. That was such a good card when it first came out. Oh.
It's still decent. It's not bad.
It is decent.
You can definitely wreck face with it still.
Let's see. Next that we have on here is Wizards of the Coast has officially announced their Magic Community Labs. This is a community-led compilation of multiplayer formats, which, from something we had in the beginning of the show, is it's about damn time. And this is, and really, but they want to culminate this, and they want to have a new format to be played at a special event at Gen Con. And on their latest posting on Daily MTG, they highlighted this, I called it an insane new format called Incarceration. I'm guessing they call it this because the length of time it's going to take to play this is equal to a short-term jail sentence.
What are you in for, man? Man, I just want to play Incarceration today.
Yeah,
I don't know what happened.
It took 4 weeks.
I haven't seen my son.
It's going to be like a game of Quidditch. It says you take 30 people, you split them into 5 6-person teams, and then it mixes in this just schizophrenic combination of Elder Dragon Highlander, Emperor, Star, Plane Chase, and Arch Enemy, and some other things as well.
Oh, God, that would, like, make your brain hurt.
Yeah, you need calculus, I think, just to, like, figure out how to lay this out in a room.
Well, I'm out. I'm out, then. I'm a terrible mathematician. I'm just going to go ahead and concede to that and throw in my towel.
But, yeah, I know they're... Unfortunately, I think they're trying to find this really kind of crazy, bizarre new format to try out at Gen Con. But in the long run, I think this would be a very nice thing just to have an officially sanctioned mothership site for all the multiplayer formats to live, where we can have the official rules be easily found or not. As much as I love Elder Dragon, Highlander, and all the other formats, sometimes it's hard to find the official kind of rules body to know, are you playing the rules on the same page as everybody else? If we can kind of have them all in one place, that just makes it easier.
Well, that, and it actually puts them that much closer to the playing community, so they can interact with us more directly and, you know, perhaps find out what we like about Magic even more.
I agree. That is never a bad thing.
No, we love them being, like, close to us, like, right across the table, asking us questions.
Let's see.
Buy us dinner.
And buy us dinner and give us scratchy back rubs.
Yeah. That's how close we like to be.
Again, I go back to thinking about Blanca. I don't know why that is. Apparently I'm in love with Blanca. And that's beyond all else.
The horrific things I could send you over the internet. Are you excited about Marvel vs. Capcom, the new one coming out?
I think so. It's been 10 years since the last one?
Yep. And I have fond memories of that one.
Yeah, I mean, Was it Saturn where you had to have, like, the extra RAM cart in order to get the full, like, effects for the home console version?
Yeah. And I'm just excited to see Morgana and Deadpool in the same game. That's like you have both my needs when it comes to video games with having semi-attractive cartoon characters and cartoon characters that have the same ideals as I do.
Yeah, I had to look up Deadpool. I was not familiar with Deadpool, to be honest.
Most aren't. He's on every official superhero team, though, or at least he likes to brag he is.
Well, so, Phil, is that who? It's a he, right?
Yeah, I think it's kind of safe to say, considering his rampant sexuality, that Deadpool is in fact a male.
Okay, that's more than I already know about Deadpool. Apparently he's insatiable.
Oh yeah, he just gets chicks like left and right, and they don't even care that he's scarred up and cancer-ridden. Deadpool has been on every official superhero team ever created, has almost every single power ever created, is aware of the fact that he is a comic book. Talks with his writer regularly and has gone so far as to kill some of his readers to bring down readership and actually give him a rest.
Wow, he sounds... I'm reading his Wikipedia page right now, which is very, very in-depth.
Yeah, and totally ridden with contradictions, which is basically that character, so that's okay.
Huh. Yeah, I guess... Yeah, I don't follow superhero comics that closely, so this is a very new thing to me.
Oh, I'm a nerd beyond belief, Tom. You don't even know.
You'll have to teach me soon. Teach me.
I will. You know, I'll just have to ride on your back, and we'll go through a swamp.
Am I writing? I'm writing an A. And I'm going to be teaching you about trebuchets. I'm building. Me and a friend are actually going to build a trebuchet this summer.
I don't even know what that is, much less if I'm able to pronounce it. Oh, what is that?
It is a type of catapult. That's the one you've probably seen, like in things like Braveheart, where there's a big
it's
like a big sling.
I take it back. You're much more of a nerd than I am if you're building your own catapult.
Yes, we are, because we want to be able to throw a small bowling ball. That is our
goal. Like that innate childhood dream to have the kitapult, like from Richie Rich?
A little bit. Well, this is me and my friends. Every summer we make like one big construction project.
Build a Gundam.
Build a guy. I will not. Last year we made a diving bell.
No. Make a Gundam, Tom. And then like you can ride it to North Carolina, and then I'll steal it from you. It'll be okay.
I don't even know what a Gundam is.
Blasphemy.
I keep thinking Gungan, and I don't think you want me to build like a crappy Star Wars costume.
No. Well, that would be terrible. A Gundam is a giant robot.
Oh, maybe I could be like the guy in like Canada that built the bear wrestling suit. I could maybe try that, though.
Yeah, let's do that, and let's also make it to where it can only be piloted by lumberjacks.
well, that's in Canada. I mean, you're either a fishing guide or a Mountie. I mean, there's kind of two options.
Yeah.
So we had a couple of tournaments this weekend. I'll just give you the winners. We won't go to these in too much depth. We had Grand Prix Manila. This was actually won by Japan's Naoki Nakata. I always take a look at the top 8 decks just for personal edification. This was a standard tournament. I was very excited to see a Polymorph Emrakul deck in the top 8.
Ah, you and my best friend. Oh, yes. I'm so sick of seeing Polymorph.
One-trick ponies make it to the top 8 makes me very, very happy.
That deck is terrible. Actually, the deck is great, but I'm just sick of even looking at, you know, you go to do something to them, and they go Polymorph, and then you just cry.
Especially when something like Emrakul, it's like, oh, 15-15.
That on turn 3 really, really hurts, actually.
That's the whole point. Let's see. Matt Elias, he won the Star City Games Philly Legacy Open playing his version of the Zoo deck called Miserable Zoo.
Well, let's take a look at why it's so miserable, shall we?
Basically, he says that it's a reference to an online war of words with a fellow Star City Games columnist, Max McCall. It's a Zoo deck. You have Grim Lava Mancer, Knight of the Reliquary, Loam Lion, which is the white Kurt Ape. You have the Quasali Primage, Step Lynx, Tarmogoyf, Wild Nacatl, Fire Blast,
yep,
Lightning Bolt.
That looks like it's pretty miserable, yeah.
Yeah, it does. It's one of those things where, you know, it's like it's the KISS motto. Keep it simple, stupid. There you go.
It gets it in like Enzo, yep.
Let's see. Next, this was the Starkington Post, which puts up a lot of good general magic news. There was a report that Wizards of the Coast had successfully sued a tournament organizer for tournament fraud. I think we heard about this.
Oh, yeah. Those were the guys who were hustling and making up locations for free cards.
Yeah, so this is now the official aftermath of that. Is basically they got rid of the co-defense, so they really just are sticking to this one organizer, Jonathan Clifton. And he generated hundreds of fake DCI events. And he's actually been sued for $100,000.
Oh, good grief.
So you're curious, like, they must have had some sort of evidence about how much he made doing this, and this apparently must be related to that. It's interesting to me that that's probably a big number. I mean, to them as a company, it's probably kind of beans.
Tantamount, yeah, but...
But definitely be, if you're, like, kind of a if you're considering becoming a shady tournament organizer, this will probably persuade you not to do that.
Yes, you villainous and superstitious lots. Hopefully this will dissuade you.
And then the other side is, even if you're not a shady tournament organizer, magic may still kill you. That's kind of the theme of today, is how magic can kill you.
Those paper cuts catch up with you, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, you can get infected. I mean, we have antibiotics now, but...
And, you know, baby powder, I mean, that doesn't even do the trick sometimes.
Yeah, that's no triple the triple antibiotic ointment. Actually, this happened to my sister. She got, like, a cut in her foot, and she put the triple antibiotic ointment on it, and it kept getting worse, and she thought it was getting infected, so she kept putting more on it, until like, her whole foot was, like, bright red and infected.
Okay, I can't really say anything on that, because when I was in high school and a moron, I went out on a trip with my girlfriend and stepped on a seashell. The shell physically went inside of my foot, right? So I pull it out, and it just, like, squirts blood all over the place. So I get home, and I have a bandage on it, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, you know what? Super glue holds things pretty tightly.
Ooh, that's a good idea there, buddy.
Yeah. So I put the super glue on. Well, about 2 days later, I'm like, oh, my God, my foot's in so much pain. So I finally peel back the glue, and just pus and blood gets everywhere. It was the worst, like, decision of my life.
Is it like a huge boil infection underneath that?
It was like the glue was turning black.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I realized
like that almonds kind of in here. Does everybody smell those almonds?
Yeah, so I realized that was kind of a bad idea, and after I let it breathe for a day or two, I was fine, and now I just have this cute little scar underneath my foot.
Yeah, the only thing I ever did to my foot is I actually cut my heel off once.
What?
Yeah, like, just at home, my parents have a pool. Like, we have an outdoor pool.
Mm-hmm.
And we, in the backyard, we can also put up a volleyball net. But we don't leave up all the time, so we just have, like, the metal, I guess, post holes in the ground, but we have a metal pipe to keep them open.
That's like a setup for a horrific accident waiting to happen.
Yeah, you know, and it's just, you know, just like a centimeter above the dirt, you know, the base of the dirt grass. And I usually don't pay attention there, and I was just running, and I felt something kind of brush my foot. It kind of hurt. I didn't think much of it. I was in the grass, also, and I step on the concrete. I'm like, ah! It flaps to the ground. And
all the static rocks getting in there.
Well, I just kind of zipped it across, and my dad keeps things very well maintained, so he had kind of cleaned the pipe so they're basically razor sharp on the edge.
Man.
And I just sliced off about, like, a good centimeter of my heel, you know, just like a straight across. So you could, like, see, like, the pulpy, like, subcutaneous fat, like, beneath, like, the skin and muscle of your foot.
And, you know, you hate foot or injuries because those are actually the hardest to get over, in my opinion.
Yeah, because I couldn't do anything for, like, the rest of the summer.
And every time you were, like, walking around and talking to somebody, you're just like, oh, yep. But how can magic kill us, Tom?
Well, this is from a study by Dominic Micklewright, who probably does these studies because he was abused as a child due to his last name. From the University of Essex, he put a number of digital gamers. So we were making a little bit of an inference. This was done by digital gamers, but you can take all these points and make it about magic players. He took some digital gamers and put them through a PESA test to determine their general physical hardiness. And these were young adult male gamers, we'll say under the age of 30. The results? Their physical fitness levels in some cases was as poor as senior citizens who smoked heavily. This included even gamers, if you looked at them, appeared healthy. And they point out is, well, there's no difference between playing Halo or World of Warcraft for 10 hours a day versus playing Magic Online or tournaments or something where you're basically sitting sedentary for 10, 12 hours at a time on a regular basis.
Especially in today's society when you're already sedentary for most hours of the day anyways due to a profession or, you know, otherwise.
So it's one of those things where they point out, you know, moderation is the key. We're not telling people to quit playing Magic, but you got to combine things a little bit, I guess.
Well, I personally go for a nice, relaxing walk every single day just to, like, clear my mind and commune with nature and command my animal companions.
See, I get in trouble is when I go on a walk with my wife, we usually walk up to the university where we live by, and then I always get something from a Dairy Queen.
Tom, bad doctoral habits there, my friend.
But I'm down to only getting a small blizzard.
Well, I can't say anything because here in North Carolina now it's getting to be summer, which means it's going to be like 95 degrees and 100% humidity. So as soon as you step outside, like already you're just coated in sweat and you smell like you've had sex, even though you've been nowhere near the opposite sex that day. So I'll go walk for about 30 minutes or 45 minutes and then I come back and I open up the freezer and I just stick my head in there for a little bit. And I'm like, oh, wait, I have ice pops in here. Oh, well,
Freezy pops?
Yeah, and you can't just have one ice pop. You have to have multiple ones to cool yourself down and, you know, like, rehydrate yourself. Yeah.
Dude, they can't be that bad for you, can they?
The sugar in them is what kills it. Like, they're normally, like, maybe 50 calories, something like that, but they have, like, 20 grams of sugar.
They must make, like, sugar, like, what they put, like, in diet soda. DP, if you will, into DP, Jack.
No, Tom, I'll try to avoid DP by all means. It's just, you know, I like sitting when I eat my ice pops.
You don't DP yourself with the icy pops? Like, put two in your mouth at the same time or something?
Actually, yeah, I have. I can't say no, because I have done that in, like, a dehydrated, irradiated haze. But, anyways, let's deter what's next on our show notes, now that we're thinking about it.
Well, what next is, that was the magic news we had for this week. I'd say probably the biggest ones was M11, and we have all the Arch Enemy stuff. You know, M11, the pre-releases are coming up really, really soon. It always surprised me when we start to get the previews is how close it is to the sets actually coming out.
Yeah. I'm getting really excited about the stuff that's coming down the pike. I mean, if nothing else, like, it'll be something to do as I'm peeling myself away from summer classes. So I'm looking forward to the set releases. Are you going to be going to the pre-release, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, because the Arch Enemy pre-release is on June 18th. Remind me again when the M11 one is. I was trying to pull that up right now.
Oh, you always put me on the spot when I'm trying to put you on the spot. You have some mad, like, skills there, man.
I know. I'm looking at the thing here, and it doesn't have it right on the front page of the Daily MTG.
I just imagine you, like, being one of the guys who on the internet argument always has the snappy response, like, at the right time. All right, well, I'm typing in M11, and I'm getting Mezier
Object. Okay, July 10th.
There we go.
So July 10th. For M11, and then June 18th for Arch Enemy. And I'm excited to go check out the Arch Enemy one.
I will be putting myself in the car to go to M11, I must say. And after I hear from you how good Arch Enemy is, maybe I'll check it out.
So the next thing is we are revamping the What Have You Been Playing. We want to try to open this up a little bit more where you can easily talk about your latest deck, but you can also talk about a favorite deck that you've had from in the past. So Jack, you had one that you want to talk about. I'm going to open up to you first before I talk about my Mono Blue Annex deck.
All right. As I've said many times before on this podcast, I'm an evil, evil man when it comes to Magic. I like making the game as displeasurable for other people as I possibly humanly can. So recently, I've been playing Arkham Dagson in EDH.
Oh, you are a dickhead then.
Well, see, no, here's my problem, though. Like, I love playing Arkham Dagson, and especially when you get, like, Tangle Wire and then Winter Orb out. Right?
I just said, blah, 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 I'm a dickhead, blah, blah, blah.
But the problem I'm having now is my EDH group, like, one of my close friends that I play with normally, like, he does not want to play me now because he... Yeah, and this is the problem I see with the EDH community. You have people, like, I like a challenging game. I've always enjoyed, like, you don't want to sit down and just roll over somebody or have somebody at the table absolutely dominate you. So I choose to be, like, a dickhead because I like having a game where it's constantly changing, but I'm very fair in my play. Like, I don't go to play Winter Orb, for example, unless I necessarily see a opportunity where it'll slow everybody down. Like, it'll slow our aggro player down, it'll slow our combo player down. And basically, like, I like to play the lawkeeper role at the table, right? But the problem is, now my friends are not wanting to play with me. But I'm enjoying this deck, Tom, so what do I do?
You can't play it. I can't respect somebody that's playing Arkham Dax in EDH, sorry.
Now, have you ever played against the deck?
I have played against some versions of the Arkham Dagson deck because they do abuse stuff like Tangle Wire and other just
and anything, power
anything back, that is yeah, recursion. Oh, God, yeah, it gets bad.
Well, see, I didn't know that Sunder was banned in EDH, and I also was playing that for a week, so I think that pissed a lot of people off, too. But this led into a very good discussion, and I was wanting to bring this up with you as well. Okay, to me, Sunder, I'll admit, it's a dickhead card because it sets everybody back at, like, ground zero, right?
Yeah, so I guess you get to keep... It returns all the lands here to their hands, and you're, right. Including your own.
How is that any worse than Kedarek Leviathan?
To be honest, it's... I guess maybe because it's an instant.
Well, yeah. No, actually, Sunder's not an instant. It's a sorcery. But
Sunder is an instant. I will guarantee... I will bet you money on that one.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm thinking of... God, what's the one where it bounces all permanents back to their hands?
Oh, that you are stumping me on.
Okay, yeah. Well, I can't remember it at this time, but it's definitely banned, and I found that out the hard way. To me, though, that's not any worse than Ketterick Leviathan, because both ways, you're just essentially time-walking somebody for a set number of turns. With Ketterick, it might be 1, or it might be 10. And it's the same way with this other card. I don't see how that card is any more or less unfair.
Oh, Upheaval.
So, Tom,
that's the one that
Upheaval.
Returns
all. Yeah, there we go. So, Tom, what does it take for a card to, by your standards, be considered unfair or dickish?
Well, I'd have to say, I guess Sunder is not unfair. It can be dickish. Because what differs to me, Sunder versus Upheaval, is if you're playing something like EDH, you can prepare for the Sunder. Like, I'm going to have certain things in play. Well, Upheaval, since it's returning all permanents, unless you have something, I'm trying to think of how you could even get around this.
Actually, it's a bad comparison now that I'm thinking of it. But all the same, I mean, what does it take for a card to be considered unfair, in your opinion? Like, I've had people argue with me that Brain Freeze is unfair. But by itself, Brain Freeze is really not that bad, if you think about it.
I guess I would not say Brain Freeze is unfair. I mean, I guess I'm trying to think is, like, talk about, like, Arkham Dagson. Is he unfair? I mean, he's still a 2-2 which can be killed. And I guess in EDH, if you're playing multiplayer EDH, I mean, you can play Arkham Dagson, but you also are gambling that you may get picked on.
As soon as I bring up my general, unless I have, like, Lightning Greaves or the Hall of the Bandit Lord on the field, I paint a giant target on my head, and I'm aware of that, especially because usually I'll go and I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I'll Tinker for Mind Slaver or something like that.
I thought Tinker was banned in EDH as well.
Oh, I mean, I was using it as a term of phrase with Arkham Dagson, yeah. To me, like, I'll just go ahead and I'll go out and grab things like that, and I know as soon as I do that, like, everybody at the table turns to me. And I've even had people, like, tell me before, you know, Jack, we like playing cards, blah, 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 we have better games when you don't play, blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, even in that same respect, just because I go and grab those cards, it doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to win.
It's like, inherently, I would say it's not the Arkham Dagson that turns into a dickhead card, it's cards like Tanglewire.
Yeah, I mean, winner
or... do anything now for a while.
Yeah, because Dagson on his own really is not that bad. Because I could just as easily go grab a mana-producing card, or, like, Voltaic Key, or anything like that. Winter Orb would be a lot more unfair, in my opinion, if I went and grabbed that.
Are you at least playing Arkham's Whistle in that deck, to make it fair?
I have no idea what you're talking about yet again, so what is that card?
It's a card from Ice Age. It's his Whistle.
He has a Whistle?
Yes.
Is it a wondrous whistle that blows many a
tune? Things attack, and if they don't, they get destroyed.
Well, good grief, no. Oh, ooh, Tom, I like that. How much does it cost?
It's a 3 colorless to put out, 3 to tap and activate.
You have a devious mind as well, my friend.
I looked up Arkham to see what else. I mean, there's a really bad one. There's like Arkham Slay from Ice Age, which is terrible.
The name already just gives me horrific images.
Yeah, you just give stuff vigilance. It's just not very exciting. You also have one where you can, it says Weather Vane, where you can make stuff either a snowland or either become a snowland or become a non-snowland.
Ooh, that's terribly exciting.
Very, very exciting.
I'm chilling in my boots in my snow.
I would say, you know, kind of, we've always had this, you know, talk about like douchebag cards for EDH. I'd say there's probably very few cards that are just truly unfair to be playing. I would say like Arkham Dagson. You have to gamble where there are some pretty abusive combos with it, but as long as you're playing multiplayer EDH, it's probably going to be balanced out by the group in general.
Yeah, because I don't run any of the combos in my deck. I just run like Winter Orb and try to keep the game controlled long enough to be able to do anything. Okay, let me give you another good example. Recently, I've been playing Commandeer, right? People hate that card, but Commandeer in of itself, like, it's not inherently unfair because I'm still having to pitch cards to be able to play it for free. If I choose not to pay 7.
I say that one does not seem unfair to me. Like the one I still think the premier kind of dickhead card is Rhystic Study.
Oh yeah.
Because that's one where really it comes out.
I'm a bad man. I run that.
Because it's just solely is so beneficial to one person where I'd say playing that puts such a huge target in your head that's almost not worth it these days.
Yeah. But anyways, let's talk about your deck, because I'm actually interested in Annex now.
Yeah, this is basically the closest I have to my own dickhead deck. This is the Mono Blue Annex Muse Vessel deck. Have you ever played with Muse Vessel?
Sounds familiar at Mills, doesn't it?
Basically, it takes cards out of their hand. So exactly, it's a 4 mana to put out. It's colorless, obviously. 3 mana tap. Target player exiles a card from his or her hand. You can only use this ability as you could a sorcery. Then it has the second ability of a 1 colorless mana, colon, choose a card exiled with Muse Vessel. You may play that card this turn.
Oh, that's not nice.
Yeah, and then you use cards like Annex to take their lands, things like Felwar Stone so you can produce their mana. And it's just got kind of cheap bouncings like Temporal Adept, Remand, Exhaustion, just all these things just to slow the game down so you're slowly taking all their cards out of their hand with a Muse Vessel and then casting them and killing them with their own stuff.
That's got to be a lot less fun when they don't have a really good deck, though. Because you're like, oh, I'll take your Grizzly Bears.
But it's probably most when you first come out where they think it's just a mono blue and you're just using this as a kind of a weird discard tool, and then you put out the first Felwar Stone, they're like, oh.
I hate you.
But that's kind of probably the closest I have to just where I just sit there and not do much besides sort of counter and bounce stuff and then just start casting their own spells against them. And I have mind control if they get something out, or I can take that.
You're a mean man.
It's a fun deck. So I think that each week I'll be bringing out kind of one of my old decks and just talking about, because I have a few decks that have been around for 10 years now. They get slowly updated.
I've got other douchebaggy decks I could talk about next week. Like the infamous two scoops I've talked about at length on this show.
Yeah, so maybe that will deserve its own full discussion on the next episode. I'd say bring that one, have it in front of you so we can run through the whole deck. And I'll belittle you again.
It'll be the most probably boring 15 minutes of discussion we've had on the show, because the deck literally was designed to go to time. It won by not winning.
It can't be any worse than my solo episodes, Jack.
I like the solo episodes personally.
Yeah, the feedback that I get from the listeners says there's not very many that might agree with you.
Well, you know what, Tom? I think you have a very soothing radio voice, so there we go.
Yeah, if I have full show notes, it goes much. Now that I have the Jonas Brothers poster to talk to, it also is just much better.
That's just disturbing, man. Of course, then I can't say anything. I recently revamped my room with some art I got from HeroCon, so now I'll look up and I'll have Rorschach on one wall, or I'll look up and I'll have this random fantasy print that I got, and I talk to them, and sometimes it just conflicts, and now I have you as an elf warrior in my head, or you're a superhero.
But Rorschach, he's a pretty phenomenal anti-hero, though.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, he was a great example of, absolute justice by the writer of that comic, so, he's cool.
So, and in the movie, the way he was portrayed in the movie was fantastic.
He was the only reason I stayed awake during that film, actually.
Every time you saw him, you were just like, oh, God, what is he going to do this time?
Thank God he doesn't have a blue penis.
Some soup!
Ah. Yeah, that film, as much as I tried to, just be a cheerleader for it. Oh, it was terrible. Tom, I consider myself a mature individual at this point in my life, but I could not get over Dr. Manhattan having his big blue dong on the screen.
His big blue dingly balls is hanging around, and he had Papa a Smurf. Huge penis. comically huge. I'm like, I guess if I could grow myself, and change my size, I'd probably have a huge penis too, but it was distracting.
You mean you don't already, Tom?
Now, I'll be the first one. I'm not having a Dr. Manhattan, where it's, hitting my... where I have scars on my knees from it, battling back and forth.
Well, personally, I have Jormungandr the World Serpent. But anyways, let's get on to listener emails now that we're talking about dicks.
With a jiggle post below.
I believe you got some fantastic college humor-related mail this week, buddy.
Yeah, so first is our listener emails. We love to get these. You can email me, Tom, at pitimp, P-I-T-I-M-P, at mtgcast.com. And Jack, where should they hit you up?
All right, folks, if you want to get a hold of me, the best way to do it is send an email to jack@mtgcast.com. I promise I'll try to respond to your emails. I can always do it with haste, but, I do take the time to hit you back. So please hit me up there. You can also get me at my FormSpring account, which is jack from NC, all one word, at formspring.me. Now, you can ask me any question you want there, but keep in mind I have a tendency to raise my eyebrows and step back from my computer if they're really alarming, so just keep that in mind. I've also got my Twitter account, which is just Jack from NC. Ooh, you can tell I have a massive imagination when I'm coming up with these.
And if you email me, I'll give you the hot healing hands from The Karate Kid. Do you remember that? Where Pat Morita slaps Santa and goes,
"You're healed!"
And then he puts it on his shoulder and heals it.
There are some days I actually need that, especially with my knuckles and stuff now that the weather's changing.
So I really want to do that in clinic someday. Like somebody came with like some sort of like an arm, like a knee injury, just be like,
just into the healthcare bill.
Are you serious? That'll be $200.
Yeah, I'm totally serious. Cough it up, buddy.
So Cody C. sends in a video from collegehumor.com that was made regarding the Three Wolf Moon t-shirt, and this was done as a song and kind of a Pocahontas Disney style.
Oh, is that the one with the girl who's the Indian?
Yes, it is actually really well done. Case.
Yeah.
And he also wanted to say he thought They Live is awesome.
It is. It's got Rowdy Roddy Piper in it. How can you not like it?
And Keith David with arguably the longest fight scene. Did you realize that was a real fight scene?
No, I didn't know that until
It was supposed to be just like 3 seconds long, and they were actually punching each other. They basically just, he just said, okay, if you guys want to beat the shit out of each other, go for
it.
You might as well.
Oh, gosh.
Let's see. And M. Hall, he liked our discussion of the Three Wolf Moon shirt from last time, and he sent me in another apparently very famous product on Amazon called Tuscan Whole Milk.
The Tuscan Raider milk, yeah.
It's the Tuscan whole milk at Amazon. It again, has like 1,200 customer reviews. And some of these, one's like an entire, probably like 2 pages of a poem. And just
why am I reading this?
I mean, they're fascinating to read.
Oh, God. The things we get sent some weeks.
And one guy, he refers to himself as being a professional like milk raider, kind of like a wine taster, called the Milk Expectorator. And he gave this one a 92 of 100.
Make your only stock in store. Once upon a midday sunny, while I savored nuts and honey with my Tuscan whole milk, 1 gallon, 120 fluid. Oh, I'm just going to stop. This is ridiculous.
Some of these, yeah, they're just fantastic. So I wanted to say thank you. This, it gave me a little bit of cheer that day that I read this. You can also find a link on the same page to Fresh Whole Rabbit. And it shows like a, that's really a gross picture, but.
A fluffy little bunny being split open.
Let's see, next, Agatha. This is actually, who is also known as a girl who plays Jund as well as a geologist from Canada. And she wrote in with some information about talc, like the substance talc, that is
baby powder
helped keep Conley's balls dry. It has a Mohs hardness of 1. It's usually used in geology classes to say, hey, look at how soft this rock is. Isn't that cool? It's not soluble in water. If it's put under high pressure and heat, it turns into soapstone that can be used to be making carving bears and shit in Canada by the Inuit and people trying to make souvenirs. It's not only used as baby powder, it's used as a lubricant, a filler in paper making, or a food additive. And this one I'd heard of is actually used as a mixer for things like heroin. So people actually get these kind of odd, like pulmonary hypertension and other things for when they inject the heroin, the talc actually gets into the bloodstream, but it can't get through the blood vessels in the lungs, so it just builds up there.
And people say our show is not educational. Yeah, I'll tell you what.
Yeah. And also, there's a study where she found that some people force rats to breathe in talc for 6 hours a day, 5 days a week. Then after 113 weeks, they developed tumors.
Oh, really now?
They said, don't breathe
in. My God, that's shocking.
So don't breathe in massive quantities of talc for a few years and you'll be okay.
I mean, you know, and I hear coal miners always like die without any problems in their lungs.
Oh, coal lung. Yes. There's also a Conley Henderson mine that produces talc in Canada.
I bet that place is dry, too.
It's probably bone dry. Or boner dry.
Oh, sure.
Mike S., he said that he was upset because he wanted to let me know that the Three Wolf Moon shirt was at least a 2-year-old internet meme. And he wanted me to look at peopleofwalmart.com and awkwardfamilyphotos.com to catch up on my memes. He also wanted to update me that the Limited Resources Clan on MTGO has actually won over 5,000 packs and drafts by its 200-plus members. That's a lot of packs.
Awesome.
And they're actually in the top 10% of MTGO clans, which I thought was pretty cool.
That is pretty awesome. Go guys, yeah.
Let's see, Mike B., he has a B-horror recommendation.
I believe that's Matt P.
Matt P., sorry, yes.
Yeah.
I was already moving on to the name of the movie, which is Piñata Survivor Island. This movie just sounds terrible.
Should I read this in the movie guy voice for us?
Yeah, go for it.
They were just some ordinary college co-eds who wanted to collect as much underwear as possible. Now they're at the mercy of a monstrous beast who stalks them as prey. Enter the students who originally arrived at the island for an adventure of celebration of Cinco de Mayo. the festivities take an evil turn when, during an underwear raid, one pair of co-eds handcuffed together in front of a spirit of the team smash a piñata and unleash evil spirits contained within. Starring William Dafoe in Piñata Survival Island.
Yeah, it sounds pretty bad.
Yeah.
And IMDb is the 71st on the list of worst movies of all time.
Wow, do you think I captured the movie guy there succulently?
I think you did. The Underwear Raid, I like that change. I suppose an Underwear Raid is good.
Yeah. Well, I had to throw my own little flavor on it.
Now, if you do that too much, though, you get in trouble.
Yeah, they'll start suing me for dead actor voices.
See, Lincoln G, he writes in, he wanted to say a quick thank you note for the length of Monday Night Magic. Every Tuesday, I drive to a small town about an hour and a half away from where I work, and I like to listen to your show on the way. My car only has a CD player. So he burns Monday Night Magic onto an audio CD, so he likes it when the shows are an hour and 20 minutes or less, because that's the maximum length for a CD.
Well, we sure you here at Monday Night Magic, if there's one thing we have, it's stamina for making a show as long as humanly possible.
Especially when I look at our show right now, is that you're going to be cutting some off, so I apologize. Thank you to Brad R. He sent in some good ideas for Tribal Time with Tom. Thorne sent in some card images. One was a new made one called Jace the Kidney Thief, with an alternative casting cost of you could donate a kidney. He also had one that is called Demythify, where if you cast it, it changes the rarity of a spell from mythic to being a rare. Completely pointless, Mike. It seemed very much like an unglued card to me.
Rare be gone, actually. That channels a lot of that there.
Let's see. Craig W., he writes in that he said he has enough money to buy all the cards that you would need to play in Standard, but he doesn't like playing Tier 1 competitive decks as you get to miss on the flavor and art of a large percentage of the commons and uncommons that are available. He also wanted to get any recommendations for books that go over the general Magic strategy or Magic history. The couple I came up with was, if you are looking at Magic strategy, we have Next Level Magic by Pat Chapin. Then we also have the kind of more the beginner's guide, is the Casual Planeswalker's Ultimate Guide to Deck Building that actually interviewed the authors, it's probably like 6 months or a year ago. Do you have any, Jack, that I'm not thinking, maybe about Magic history?
I know when MTG first got started, and this was, maybe 8 years ago, longer, there was a book wrote by Richard Garfield that had, like, The Dark and a couple of other sets that were out at the time, where he had just kind of gathered them all up and had a couple of combos and the basic rules of play that were featured. I can't remember the name of it. Now, if he's looking for Magic history and he's talking about flavor, I'd recommend reading The Brothers' War, which was about Urza and Mishra fighting. As far as flavor, there's, of course, the new Planeswalker novel's coming out as well. But I believe he's actually looking more so for play, so I can't come up with anything.
And there was just the Magic Encyclopedia, but I think that was a lot of just kind of a way of, before we had the internet, like Magic Cards and Info, a way of seeing all the cards.
There is 4dchan.com, which is actually like a Wikipedia of traditional games, and there's a lot of Magic discussion on there as well.
Oh, I hadn't thought about it too, is MTG Salvation also has a wiki that actually does have a lot of like stories about the different races of Magic. I mean,
you will learn more than you ever thought was possible to learn about fictional characters on there, yeah.
Exactly, because when I do these travel times with Tom, I try to find a little bit of history, and that's usually where I go. What else do we have on here? Dun, 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 dun.
I see animated garden penis.
Yes, that's, hold on there, that we're getting to that one. So Jamie wrote in today asking, what do we think of proxies? And he's saying specifically in casual kitchen table Magic. I kind of wrote back saying this is it's a tough question. I feel it's like anything else in Magic where this is like the douchebag card. There's no right or wrong answer.
Go ahead.
In my mind, like I know I've done it personally for, when I'm playing like a tribal deck, if there's like a creature card that's really hard to find, like it's from Portal 3 Kingdoms or something like that, it's not powerful, I just can't actually get one, I'll proxy that.
Yeah, to me at least, like normally in our group, when we proxy, it's a card that we intend on purchasing, but for whatever reason we just haven't gotten a hold of yet. I see nothing wrong with proxies. Now, if you go over the top and you have a proxy of a key combo in your deck that is totally broken, yes, I have a serious problem with that. But like a friend of mine proxied up Teferi. I mean, I have no problem with him doing that because that doesn't, like, affect the game state at all whatsoever because I can just turn around and kill it the next turn. Stuff like that, I don't mind. If you're proxying, like, the Power 9 just to make your deck broken, yes, I have a problem with that. But if you're proxying it because you can't afford it and you're going to get a hold of it, that's a different matter.
And I also thought the other time I could see it too being an okay thing to proxy maybe a larger number of cards in deck. But if you have a couple of players that have a very wide chasm between their card collections, you have one person that has a ton and one person that has the deck builder's toolkit, that's all they have. If you want to try to make a little bit more balance when they play games just initially, proxying doesn't seem like a bad thing.
No, it's to me at least, it's perfectly fine, especially with kitchen table magic.
So you as listeners, if you have any thoughts on this, which I hope you do, email it to us and we'll share on the next show. Thank you to Will B. He sent in a lot of the news items this week. Thank you. Saved me some time. And then Kevin, for I would call this the question of the week, he just sent in, you know, Tom, I like the show. Go, I want to know what you guys think about Weatherseed Totem. And at first I'm like, I know what that card does. And I'm like, why is this a question? It's not terrible, but how is this cool? He's just like, and I read the email more, and he's like, not the card itself, but the art. So I'm like, okay, I'll go pull up the art, which I'm doing right now. And then I say, then a big sigh escapes my lips, and I'm like, that is probably one of the more suggestive art pictures I've seen in a long time on a Magic card.
Well, I can't remember the name of the card, but I think it was might have been like Resurrection or something. It had a priest with his arms raised and his eyes kind of rolled back, right? This goes right back to me talking about the templating issues earlier, and he had, like, I guess what would be his choir boy or his underling or whatever.
In front of him, it just looks
terrible. And the art had been cut out, so you could not see anything but the top of the head of the choir boy. And the flavor text was something like, "And the blows of faith hammer out the evil," or something like that. It was terrible. It was so suggestive in every way, shape, and form.
And the other, to me, I say is probably one of the more blatant penises on a Magic card is Eye of the Storm from Ravnica. I would suggest you pull that card up right now, Jack.
Okay, let's pull it up. Oh, wow! Oh, my goodness.
I remember getting this card pack and saying, like, what the hell? I mean, I'm looking at it. It's, like, looking at me right in the face.
Oh.
I mean, it doesn't look like an
eye.
It's
just sitting there, yeah.
That's not an eye.
That's... Oh, I've made it to 20 years and I still laugh at the sight of a penis. That says something.
Yeah,
good grief.
So Weatherseed Totem is a card where...
Okay,
it looks like a garden gnome penis. I don't know how else to put this thing.
I have to, like, get this out of the window or I'm going to keep laughing through what's left of the show.
Yeah, the Eye of the Storm is just terrible. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's bad. Maybe yeah. It's actually the Eye of Sauron, Tom.
He could be, but yeah, so I responded to Kevin saying, yes, penises galore, and then I thought the original name for the Weatherseed Totem was Animated Garden Gnome Penis. Because it can actually get up and walk around. You can't turn it into a Weatherseed Tree Folk.
Hmm. But I hope Bad Dragon doesn't catch wind of that.
Ooh. Man, I've seen much worse things on that website already, so they've already been
like
there.
Some of the users.
Beyond that.
Yeah. Anyways.
Chad F., he sends in our good listener from Hawaii, he sends in a B-Horror recommendation for Sleepaway Camp. This is actually an entire series. Here's the synopsis.
I've actually seen this one. Yeah.
And they re-released it in 2006. I actually had some actors that you would recognize the names of. And sadly enough, so Sleepaway Camp is Welcome to Camp Arawak, where teenage boys and girls learn to experience the joys of nature as well as each other.
Oh-ho-ho.
This is, you know, 80s horror. So, of course, if you have premarital sex, you will then be killed. That is the rule. But when these happy campers begin to die in a series of horrible accidents, they discover that someone, or something, has turned their summer of fun into a vacation to dismember. That is one of the best
things. That was a wonderful turn of phrase.
And it's probably going to be our show title, too, so Vacation to Dismember.
No. Surely not.
Unless you come up with a better one, that's what it's going to be.
All right, well, then I have a goal before we end this tonight, then.
Last but not least for my emails is J.E. actually and his roommates put together an entire new set of planes to use for plane chase. So there's 40 new plane cards. And these are incredibly well done. You know, full art. They look like actual planes cards. I'll have a link in the show notes to a zip file containing all of them as JPEGs.
Because if there's one thing that's cooler than free stuff, it's incredibly well-made free stuff.
Free stuff. And this way you can play plane chase with an entire new set of stuff. I mean, really.
So we could fold up $100 bills and give them to you as well. That would be a bit costly. Yeah.
Now, Jack, do you have any emails before we do our big old giveaway for the week?
Actually, yes, I would like to say one thing. First of all, Thorne, I meant to give him a shout-out a long time ago for an email he sent me that I can't even remember right now. So, Thorne, you're awesome for whatever reason it said. I said that you were. So, yeah, there you go. Okay, the other thing is we had a listener who – remember a couple of weeks back I mentioned Throbbing Gristle?
Yeah, a little bit, yes.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest and say that I'm very new to industrial music. I'm still kind of like looking around and poking and seeing what bands I like. And we had a listener named Ian who wrote in, and he basically gave me the rundown on the history of industrial music and was polite enough to actually enclose an MP3 for a group called the Taj Mahal Travelers, and it was amazing. So, Ian, I know I'm probably butchering your name as well. I greatly appreciate it, and I sent you an email back, so I hope you're going to, like, hit me up with that. It was awesome, and I still highly recommend everybody go check out Throbbing Gristle as well as the Taj Mahal Travelers now. So, that's all I got.
Oh, very nice.
And yeah, that was very nice of him.
And we'll keep the MTG Cast news up pretty short. The kind of two things I'm going to announce the winners from our big contest, but also I need some ideas for our next contest, and also what kind of prizes you like. Do you like to get singles in general, or do you like to get boosters? That's my two questions for you, the listeners, to email me about. So now on to our winners. This is the contest to send in a picture of where you play Magic or of your Magic collection. And the prize initially is going to be 2 Gideons, but due to the amazing number of really good entries, I increased that. So I took cards out of my own collection. We're going to give away the 2 Gideons, and then we're going to give away 1, 2, 3. Oh, I'm clicking too many times. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 other prizes.
We're such nice guys.
Yes, because some of these were just amazing. So it was really hard to pick the winners. Of course, this is very subjective, picked by me. So the winners of the 2 Gideons, the first Gideon goes to Dread Pirate 777. It was one of the earlier entries, and I actually responded to this one on the forum. This was just a picture of a guy playing a mannequin dressed as a pirate with like a bunch of booze on the table and some cards. And
that's also Dracula, though. So it's a Dracula pirate zombie crossover.
And what won it was the guy himself wrote on the back of like a wife beater shirt, North Dakota for life. So,
oh,
you desecrated a shirt in order to make this entry, so therefore you want a Gideon.
Poor guy.
And then Gideon number 2 actually goes to a collection picture. This is to Wattsider, Watsider. First thing, because he probably had one of the more comprehensive collections that was posted in the forum thread. He had a massive number of boxes, cards, decks, videos, books. He also had the bonus of he had a picture of himself in there with like giving me the 2 thumbs up, which I thought was pretty funny. And it also looked like he was living in the shack that the Unabomber was arrested in. It's like, you know, the 2x4s with the insulation, you know, unfinished. I'm like, that looks awesome.
Oh, I'm just poring over some of these right now. This is incredible.
Yeah, so you know, take a look in the show notes, because a lot of I know I couldn't get prizes to everybody, but a lot of the entries were great. Take a look at all these, and we'll go through the other winners. Next, who's going to be winning a Garruk Wild speaker? This is The Origin, all one word. This is a cool entry from Taiwan of his local card store where they had people playing inside, they had people playing outside, and there was this one shot of the inside of the store where the display case where they had packs and cards, there's just a dog sacked out on top of the display case taking a nap. I thought that was pretty cool. Let's see, next, Blinky. Let's see, he sent in a picture of this publication that they're playing in Canada. And this you're winning a Day of Judgment. Sorry, let me say, you won a Day of Judgment. And this also spawned an entire conversation I had with Conley about, we understood that we thought it was actually illegal to have a sanctioned tournament in a location that serves alcohol. We thought this was actually part of the standing rules for sanctioned tournaments.
Has that changed?
Yeah, this is what I'm just curious about. So if anybody knows more about this, let me know. But this, not only was it seemed, this looked like a very cool place to play Magic, but also spawned a really good conversation.
So now, however, we at MTG Cast condone drinking and playing Magic, as that might result in some horrible judgment calls on all involved.
Everything in moderation. Don't drink and play Magic and drive. That's all I say.
Unless it's hilarious.
Unless it's really funny.
And then get a video of it and send it to us.
Let's see.
No,
next,
don't.
Yeah, please. I don't want to do that. Next, we have Sea Sparrow, who is winning a Rampaging Baylos, the pre-release one. And this is for this very imaginative display of his collection, because it was stacked vertically and stood almost 59 inches tall and looked like the Empire State Tower or building.
Wow.
So I was surprised at how much work some people put into these. So next is Fission Essence. He's winning a Warren Instigator. So this is the guy that actually sent it. He has more cats than I do in his pictures. He has four cats labeled in his picture. He has Wiggle Worm, Pretty Penny, Mako, and Scarecrow. Then his second picture is his cat playing a game of magic against him. Where's a scenario where the cat has cast Breath of Life targeting a Ulamog's Crusher, which comes back into play, but there's a Dragon's Breath, so it has haste. And the little cat has a little bubble above it that says, I can has annihilate you, like with a question mark.
Oh, that's adorable.
I thought it was pretty good.
So I've just now seen this picture of you and apparently Rosie O'Donnell meeting in person, Tom.
Yeah, people got really into the Rosie O'Donnell pictures there, too.
Was that a magic moment for you?
It was a little bit. So I gave one prize out to a Rosie entry because technically, much as I love them, I had to be honest with the contest was not make pictures of Tom with Rosie O'Donnell in them. But I am giving out a Rosie prize later on. Artsy Wumpus, he gets a Valakut the Molten Pinnacle. And this was one of the more elaborate displays of a collection where he took his cards and he laid them out end-to-end to cover basically his entire bed. So it's like a sheet of cards. I have no idea how long this must have taken.
Years.
A long time.
Of collecting.
Next, we have Evan C. is winning a Godless Shrine, the Plain Swamp. And this is for this really cool beachside play location where they do some cube drafting in Canada. And I kind of jokingly said I didn't know they had beaches in Canada.
They do. Mm-hmm. And they're just very cold and have polar bears.
Yes, they are. They're covered with snow. And last but not least, my Rosie O'Donnell prize is going to Cloglord. Because he made an impressive alteration of Deathless Angel to the point that both Conley and I didn't notice that he had actually also changed her outfit.
Oh, God.
It's actually the Everywhere But Eden. It's like that leather outfit she had on. But it was so well done, I didn't even notice that initially.
Oh, Tom, that's such a... I gotta admit, man, as long as we've been podcasting, I will never understand the Rosie O'Donnell thing. I mean, Tom, what about, like, a real woman like Christina Hendricks?
Is this
just one of those Tomisms I'm never going to understand about
you?
Yeah,
I think that's just the way it is. I mean, Oprah Winfrey's kind of the same way. Their personalities are just so powerful and interesting, and they've done a lot of stuff that they're just more attractive for that reason.
Oh, okay. I think I understand that now.
So that's where I explain that from. So those are the winners. If you are a winner, please email me. pitimp@mtgcast.com with your name and mailing address so I can actually send you the card. And last but not least, we have our B-movie recommendation because I had a lot of feedback that I didn't do this last week. So I have a brand new one, and this is a movie called Tiki from 2006.
Tiki.
This is kind of, it comes from my Netflix streaming queue sort of things. So this is B-horror at its best. So really this is, you know, what do you get if you mix this androgynous kind of boy George channeling female lead? There's just this unsettling nudity in this film, a lack of racial diversity, and a small, non-threatening wooden wall decoration. You get a movie that goes direct to video called Tiki. The synopsis is...
I'm already titillated.
Yeah, the main lead is when Amy moves from her beloved Hawaiian Islands. This is why every single person shown, even if they're on the Hawaiian Islands, they're all white.
Really?
They practice voodoo, or whatever it looks like in this movie. To study drama on the mainland, she has little cause to rejoice as a gang of vicious co-eds plots to make her life a living hell. With the aid of her boyfriends, the girls set up Amy as a target of a horrendous prank that results in the young girl falling victim to a brain seizure. It's actually a brain aneurysm in the movie, from which she may never recover. Seeking answers, her aunt, Mylia, who is like, she like shakes sticks like an American Indian shaman, but she's supposed to be Hawaiian, and is practicing voodoo, which makes just about as much sense as it sounds like. She arrives with a special tiki doll specifically designed to kill people. So through magic, Amy inhabits, while she's in this coma, she inhabits the tiki doll and then brings it to life and it kills people.
Wow. That sounds like an overly complicated plot.
Yeah. It actually beats one of the girls to death with a shoe.
The tiki doll comes alive, grabs the shoe, like the Nikes, and just starts hitting them with it.
Yeah. And it's like at the most 6 inches tall. It's a terrible movie.
All right, well, Tom, I actually did not come prepared this week, so what we're going to do is we're going to reach into the great big bag of dicks that I have in my room, which the great big bag of dicks is actually my random bag that has movies in it.
Oh, okay? So you don't need to say anymore. I yeah, okay. Don't ask, don't okay. tell.
No, shit, Tom. Okay, so we're going to shake the great big bag of dicks, and I'm going to pull out a movie, and we'll talk about it, okay?
And you're going to get out the great old big bag of D-cell batteries that's next to it?
All right, you hear me shaking the bag, right?
It's either that or you're doing something else. I don't know what...
Oh, you did that. All right, so we're reaching into the bag, and I pull out... All right. No, that's bad. So we're going to try and grab another movie here.
Well, he just looked one up. That sounds dead bad, too.
Let's see here.
Let me just hang one of these here for you.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
Pull out the box.
I'm actually going to talk about a movie that is 35 minutes long, and it was made in 2002. It's called A Candle in the Dark. It has Kristen McLaughlin in it and Cliff Porsche, which definitely is probably as fake as it sounds.
And Brett Michaels, too, right?
Yes, and totally Brett Michaels.
Okay.
Yeah. And, so this movie is about a man that is accused of murdering his family, even though the house he's actually in is haunted. It's only 35 minutes long, so I'm sure you can suffer that long to watch it. It's really not that bad. The problem is it was shot with a handycam.
Okay.
So the production values are incredibly low on this movie. Like, think basement and then below the basement. If your basement has a sub-basement, that's where this movie was actually shot.
Probably in the room next to where Tiki was filmed, because that looked like it was filmed like in an abandoned office building.
Oh, I think they're in an apartment together.
So what was the name of that one again?
Okay, now I have to reach back into the bag of dicks. Let's see. Okay, it is called A Candle in the Dark.
Candle in the Dark. And boy, are his arms tired. A Candle in the Dark.
All right, and let's toss everything back in the great big bag of dicks.
I can't use that as a show title, though, Jack. Much as I want to, I can't use that as a show title.
Could we? Well, we didn't. I was about to say we didn't use pubic lice and baby powder last week, did we?
No, because I want to actually be able to appear on websites. So, I guess I use baby powder and revenge crabs. I use that
as
a title.
A great big bag of fun.
I like that.
Because I've certainly had a great big bag of fun working with you this week, Tom.
Great big bag. I'm writing this down. That's why I'm saying it out loud. Bag of fun.
And for our picture, we could have a happy-go-lucky Saturday morning cartoon picture.
Okay.
Yeah,
cartoon picture. I like that. All right, everyone. Jack, thank you for joining me tonight, and thank you again a nice, long, healthy, almost an hour and 37 minutes long Monday Night Magic. I like it.
Yeah, I do too. Well, it's always a joy to podcast with you and podcastinate with the others and podcastinate in general.
Podcastinate, is that the new verb?
By gosh, I'm going to get something in the dictionary and be famous for some sort of written word somewhere. That's my new goal in life, Tom. I'm trying to become a reporter, and I'm failing. So if that just totally gets tossed out the window, by gosh, podcastinate is going to make it to Webster's.
So what is the definition of podcastinate? If it's going to go in the dictionary, it has to have a definition.
It is the verb form of podcasting. It is the adjective verb noun form of podcasting. It is the act of podcasting.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
Because you can't really be podcasting-ing-ing. That just sounds dumb.
Yeah, I mean, and you really couldn't just drop that into a conversation, with podcasting.
Podcasting. Yeah. Podcasting. No. Ing. I can't.
Ing.
You only have two ings. Podcast. Ing. That just sounds kind of cool, actually, though, now.
No. Podcastinate. Nope. You're not going to steal my thunder this week. Podcastinate. We're going to leave it at that. Podcastinating a great big bag of fun. Show title.
Podcast.
We've already mentioned pubic lace and other things this week, so I have a feeling that this is going to be a hit, probably in our golden greatest hits track coming out.
Exactly, and hopefully Conley may have some interesting news when he comes back next week, so stay tuned. Episode 212 next week, we'll have more M11, more whatever stuff. I have some
and
stuff to
more
give away.
Palindrome-related items.
Yes. So thank you, Jack, for joining me. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a good one, and have a good week.
Good night, folks.